You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Samantha Wright, filling in today for Gemma Goddard. Along with COVID, RSV, and the flu, the Centers for Disease Control is now worried about an outbreak of strep throat. Meanwhile, Ohio is dealing with an outbreak of measles. And some are concerned that there may be a new mystery illness out there. Joining us today to break all this down is Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. If you have a question for our Dr. Roundtable, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Dr. Pate, welcome back. Happy post-holidays.
Well, thank you, Samantha. Happy New Year to everyone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so let's start off the new year with strep throat and the CDC. What is going on there?
Yeah, you know, we always, anybody who's a parent knows you've gone through this with your kids and they might have strep throat. So you might wonder, what's the big deal? Well, what the big deal is that we first saw this in the United Kingdom a little bit earlier this year, that they were having far higher number of cases of scarlet fever, which is something you can get when you do get this group A strep infection, strep throat. But also, they were seeing a doubling or tripling of the numbers of invasive group A strep infections. And this is when group A strep shows up in places we wouldn't expect, like we do expect it to be in the throat. So that can be very serious. That can actually kill people. And in fact, they did have some deaths. After the UK reported this, some other countries began noticing the same thing, Ireland, Wales, I believe in France also. And then the maybe about a month ago, the Department of Health in Minnesota put out a warning that they had seen a doubling of these invasive group A strep infections and warning providers to be on the lookout for that. And then shortly after that, the CDC issued a warning and sent out a notice to physicians to be on the alert for it because we were seeing what appears to be an increase in those kind of cases here in the United States as well.
Wow, that's a lot going on.
It is. And I think we may, there's a study that just came out that I think may give us an idea of what's going on. First of all, we have known for some time that people can be at risk for bacterial infections after a viral infection. So, for example, the classic one is that people after influenza, the flu, can get an infection with a number of bacteria, but one of the ones that is a concern is Staphylococcus, and they can get a staph pneumonia, which is not common. That is not something we see as one of the typical community pneumonias. And so we've known about that and to be on the lookout. It doesn't happen often, but I, for example, my wife had one of her classmates develop this in her 50s, and she died from it. So it certainly can be serious. But this new study showed is that when people have COVID, the damage it causes to the lining in your nasal passages is more than what we thought. And what it does is that it damages a particular type of white blood cell in your body that is really essential for fighting off bacteria such as group A strep. So these white cells that you normally have there, what they do is they identify the strep bacteria. They actually engulf the strep bacteria, and then they break down the bacteria with enzymes that are within the white cell. And so what this study showed is that, number one, after COVID for a period of months, you have fewer of these particular white cells in your nasal passages lining than you should have. And the ones you have are often dysfunctional. In other words, they might engulf the bacteria, but then they don't kill the bacteria. Those enzymes don't work at all. So that may be a clue of what's going on here and why, given how prevalent has COVID infections have been, especially this year among children, why we may be seeing some of these problems occur, and particularly may explain why we're seeing all of a sudden this increase in the group A strep. What does this mean for parents? What this means is that if your child has COVID or any other virus, rather, and they get sick, but now they seem to be getting better, but then they get sick again shortly after, fever, sore throat, cough, whatever. Don't just assume that's some kind of a relapse of the virus. That's not common. Get checked, because what it may be is that they actually were getting over the virus, but now they have a bacterial infection. And we can treat that. We don't have to be scared of it. We can give antibiotics. And frankly, within about 24 hours, most of these kids will turn around. As far as scarlet fever, what you should be looking for is a rash. Typically starts out kind of a pinpoint rash on the chest or stomach or back of the child. It will then quickly spread to other parts of the body, including the face. And then look at their tongue. The tongue in scarlet fever has been described as a strawberry tongue. In other words, if they stick out their tongue, what you'll commonly see, in fact, I just saw a case of scarlet fever about 2 weeks ago with somebody here in Boise, and they have a white coating to their tongue. And then the little taste buds that we don't normally see standing out on your tongue, they're popped up like little bright red spots. So that's why it kind of gives it a strawberry appearance. Either the rash or the tongue findings, or commonly both, should prompt you to get in touch with your doctor right away.
And it sounds like this is not something that's just over in the UK, if you say you've seen a case in the past couple of weeks here.
That's right. That's right. In fact, the CDC has acknowledged we are now. You know, the difference is in the UK, scarlet fever is a reportable disease, meaning that any provider in the UK that sees a case has to report it to the federal government. That is not the case in the United States. Scarlet fever is not reportable. So we don't have as good a feeling of how much scarlet fever we're seeing. But the what the CDC said, so scarlet fever, that's easily treatable. We just need to do it quickly. We need to get them on antibiotics. But then the invasive group A strep, which is more serious in unusual places and can be life-threatening, that you really need to be assessed by a doctor promptly. We need to start treatment. That's often going to be treatment in the hospital. That is reportable. And what the CDC is saying is we're seeing higher levels of that than we would ordinarily see.
Wow. Okay. I want to jump ahead to the mystery illness. I have been getting questions about this all through Christmas break, partly because they know I have I work on the show and that I talk to you quite a bit. And the question is there a new mystery illness out there? Here's what we've been hearing. Starts off like a cold. You get a runny nose, maybe a temperature, you're tired, and it turns into a nasty cough. And this seems to be the signature from everyone I've talked to. It's a cough that won't go away. It's dry cough and productive. It lasts weeks, months, 3 to 4 months more. People get wheezy and have trouble breathing. They get a fever sometimes. Sometimes they don't. You were talking about secondary infections. A lot of the folks who are reporting this illness are getting those. Bronchitis, pleurisy, sinus infections, pneumonia. They're testing negative for COVID, flu, strep, RSV. Some people I heard from have been tested like 15 times and are still showing negative for these illnesses. So the question I keep getting is, what is it? Is it a new illness? Is it we're just all weak and weary from COVID? How do you find out if it is a new illness, like a COVID illness? And what do you do to treat a cough that won't go away? How's that for a bunch of questions?
Well, that's great, Samantha. And we'll take up the rest of the show with this.
Okay, good.
So this is a very common situation. So first of all, I am not under the impression at this time that we have a new mystery illness by way of thinking of a novel infection like the SARS coronavirus 2 was. Here's what's most likely. We are in the respiratory season. And of course, what gets talked about particularly are influenza and COVID. And the reason that we spend a lot of time on this show and other ways to reach the public about those is because if you do have those two illnesses, we want you to get tested because we actually have treatments for that. Most viral infections, we don't have an effective treatment for. And but these two, we do. If you get tested, we can identify that's what it is, and we can put you on the antiviral in a time window in which it will still work. So that's why we really talk about that. However, there are quite a number of other viruses that are circulating now and have been in past years. Enterovirus, rhinovirus, adenovirus, parainfluenza virus, metapneumovirus, and I could go on. And we always see these. We're a little bit on heightened alert because of COVID and influenza and RSV right now, but there's really quite a few circulating. And these are viruses that, unlike SARS-CoV-2, are seasonal. In other words, we typically see them this time of year. We have theories about why that is. We don't really understand the seasonality of viruses real well, but we think it has to do with the cooler temperatures, the lower humidity, the indoor gatherings, et cetera, that causes that. But we don't really know. But so most likely is that people are getting any number of these viruses. And also keep in mind, there is no rule in biology that says you can only get one virus. In fact, when we look, we can not rarely find people that are infected with more than one thing. So the problem is there are so-called respiratory panels where we can test for quite a few of these viruses. It gets a little bit more expensive the more you test. And some of them, it's just not worth testing because, you know, frankly, the fact that I can tell you you have metapneumovirus or you have parainfluenza virus might be of great interest, but it's of no clinical utility because there's no treatment and you're just basically going to get over it when you do. Now, with that said, let's talk about a couple really important points. One is, with respect to COVID, and you mentioned that one person that had talked to you that had tested 12 to 15 times, that may be a little overkill, but it does bring up a good point. With COVID, especially if you're doing rapid antigen tests at home, do not do one test and say, because it's negative, oh, I don't have COVID. One thing we do know is that these tests, because of these variants, we're not picking it up as earlier. The PCR test, which you could get from the doctor or the hospital, or now they actually do have one that just got authorized by the FDA that you can actually do at home. The PCR test will typically be positive a day or two ahead of the time that your rapid antigen test is. But if you, for example, just woke up this morning and you felt these respiratory symptoms and you tested for a rapid antigen test and it was negative, do not conclude that you don't have COVID. What you should do is, because you're sick, no matter what you have, stay home. And then the next thing is wait 2 days. So if you tested this morning, you would wait till Friday and then you would do your second rapid antigen test. If that's negative, then I think we can be more convinced you don't have COVID. To make it really the nail in the coffin, do one more test, like on Sunday. If those three are negative, you don't have COVID in all likelihood. So do multiple testing. But otherwise, I think mostly people are getting these other viruses. And then I would just go back to what we talked about a little bit ago and you talked on previous shows. We have, it has certainly been true with some viruses in the past that it can temporarily alter your immune system. It is very clear with COVID that your immune system is going to be, in many cases, disrupted for some period of time, maybe a few months. Maybe we've seen in some people up to 8 months where we don't really have a full understanding of it yet, but it appears you may be more vulnerable to an infection with COVID or another virus for that period of time. So just since you had your COVID, you should also continue taking precautions for that next 3 to 6 months, just because it's possible you may be more susceptible to viruses than before. Some of these people that you've talked to that are struggling, it's very possible they had COVID sometime in 2022, and they're just having a little bit worse of another virus because they had the COVID. They will get over it and they'll get better, but it may take longer. It may be a little rougher.
Dr. Pate, we heard from Ray, and he wants to know, what is the risk from China? I'm not sure you can quantify this, but what is the risk from China given their current rate of infection and that they're opening up for travel? Should we be worried about China and COVID?
Well, yes and no. You know, the first thing is the CDC's response is a little bit intriguing to me, where the CDC came out and said, well, because China is opening up so much, so fast, and because we think they're underreporting, that we're going to require people from China to take a test at least within 2 days of their travel to the United States, and they have to be negative. I'm not saying that that doesn't make sense, but what doesn't make sense is, why we haven't done that in other cases. We've had new variants, as you'll remember, Samantha. We had new variants come out of India. We've had new variants come out of South Africa. We never imposed these kinds of restrictions. And, the CDC's, at least their public explanation of this has been, you know, we've got to make sure that we can detect a new variant. Well, we've done a terrible job of that. In fact, it's ironic that the CDC is talking about China's lack of transparency when we just found out that the CDC was very non-transparent about the XBB.1.5, which very possibly originated in the northeastern United States. So we kind of have our own issues. But the other question is just, well, if they had a new variant, what would you do with that information? Because we've never acted on any of the other variants to try to stem the tide of people coming in the United States. I think we need a coherent strategy. We don't really have one. But what I'm more concerned about is the fact, and because it is a real concern, that with the projections of how many cases are happening and likely to happen in China, as we've talked many times, that is the perfect testing ground for this virus to be able to develop new variants. So that's a real concern. But the other more immediate concern I have is how this might disrupt China. They have gone from the pendulum being all the way to one side to now they're going all the way to the other side. And I think that's not wise. The population in China is not vaccinated to the degree that they should be. And I think it's going to overwhelm their healthcare. We've already been getting some indications from video and reporting that's leaking out of China that may be happening right now. And the fact is that we are so dependent on China for so much of our supply chain that we could have a real issue if the disease is spread so much that they can't contain it and this shuts down their manufacturing. Also, of course, we know that if you don't control this disease, it negatively impacts the economy. We're already having struggles with worldwide inflation. If you add a tanking of China's economy, even briefly, this could be a big deal. So I do think there's a lot to be concerned about. And I think we really need to do some reflection as a whole world after this about how we respond to and manage pandemics, because we're making all kinds of mistakes.
I think, yes, lots to learn and be learned as we go along. Okay, so Nancy wrote in. She says, I'm 62. She has COVID for the first time. Her symptoms started on Monday, tested positive on Tuesday, and started taking Paxlovid. She says, I'm already feeling better. My headache is gone. Temperature is normal. I had planned to travel to see her family next week, Tuesday, including her mother, who is 94. She wants to know, if I test negative before she travels, would it be safe to go?
So let me make a couple of points. The first thing is, really good for her that she's gone all this time before getting infected. I want to make sure that listeners understand the data is becoming more and more clear that you want to prolong the time it takes till you get infected. So good for her. She's made it all this time. And then number two is you want to decrease the number of reinfections. So the less, the better. The second lesson from her story is she started Paxlovid. This is a huge issue in the United States. Not enough people know about Paxlovid, including some treating practitioners who are thinking that their patients appear too well to put them on the Paxlovid. That's the whole point. You need to start the Paxlovid when they're still doing okay, because you have to start it early for it to work. And so good for her doctor or whoever treated her getting her on Paxlovid. Now, the third thing is about, okay, so when can she be around people? We do know that with the Omicron in general, we don't know what we're dealing with many of these new variants, but with Omicron in general, people are staying infected and potentially infectious for a longer period of time. It appears that about 25% or more people can still be infectious 8 to 11 days out. What we tend to see is, unless they're immunocompromised, it's pretty rare for us to see somebody who appears to be infectious at 2 weeks. So time is her friend. The second thing is that there is a good correlation, not perfect, with the rapid antigen test, not the PCR test, with the rapid antigen test. So if she were to test, let's say she gets past 10, 11, 12 days and tests, and she is testing negative on the rapid antigen test, then we believe her risk of infecting anyone is minimal. We still recommend that she wear a high quality, well-fitting mask, especially if she's going to be around other people that are at high risk. And then the last point is what we talked about in the earlier segment, is she just needs to realize that now that she's had COVID, she may be more vulnerable herself to reinfection with not only COVID, but other viruses, and just be careful about the future exposure she has. Don't treat this as a get out of jail free card.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I want to go back in the 5 or 6 minutes we have left and talk a little bit. You mentioned the white blood cells and COVID affecting your nose. You've also been writing about some of the effects we've been finding out from COVID in your blog. And we have been talking about COVID for quite a while now. And I think in the beginning it was a scary virus. And over time, we have learned a lot about it. But the things we're learning now really seem, I don't know, insidious might be a good word, when you're talking about damage to things like brains and hearts and noses, physical damage. This is kind of scary stuff that we're finding out about COVID over time.
Well, it is, Samantha, and this has been my concern, as you and I and Gemma have talked about on many occasions, that the whole focus has been on people dying with COVID. And certainly that is to be most avoided, no doubt. However, what I've been very concerned about, and what I applaud you and Gemma for making sure that we don't lose focus on this, is there are a lot of people that COVID does not kill, but does disrupt their lives because of some of these, as you refer to it, I think, insidious things. We have long COVID, but we have a lot of other things. We had a very prominent businessman who, after COVID, and he was public about this, so I'm not telling any secrets, that after COVID, he got terrible tinnitus ringing in his ear, that for people that haven't had that might think that's not a big deal. It can drive you crazy and when it's persistent and annoying. And he ended up taking his life because it was so terrible. We have other people that are young people, previously active, who no longer can exercise to any degree, can't even walk up or down a flight of stairs. And to take a shower would mean they have to go and rest for hours to recover. You mentioned some of the things that I'm writing about on my blog about what are the clinical studies showing us. We are now finding that in a not trivial number of people, this virus can persist. Now, we don't know what that means for the long-term health, but we do know there are other viruses that do persist in your body. So, for example, Samantha, you and I are of the age, we probably both got chickenpox when we were young. Mm-hmm. That virus stays with us. And in fact, that's why we can potentially one day get shingles, because it's the same virus that can manifest that. The question here is, you know, what does that mean if we don't get rid of that SARS-CoV-2 virus from our bodies? Could one day, when we're older, one day if we got cancer or had to be on immunosuppressive drugs, could that then cause that virus to remanifest itself in some bad way? So there's a lot of things we don't know yet, but we are learning more. And I think what is clear is you really can't compare this SARS-CoV-2 virus to the common cold, to the flu. It has many unique characteristics, and some of which are concerning. Now, that doesn't mean everybody will develop problems, and it doesn't appear that that is the case. But unfortunately, we are not at the point where we can be able to tell people, oh, Samantha, you won't have any problem if you do get COVID, and Gemma, oh, you are going to have long-term problems. We don't know how to advise people of that risk. So I do think it is good advice that we not be paralyzed with this disease. We don't need to stop our lives, but we also shouldn't be cavalier about it either, because there is this potential for long-term problems.
Absolutely. And we keep finding out more, or you do, and you'll keep sharing that with us, which is great information. We've been speaking with Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. If you have a question about COVID or any of the other viruses we've been talking about, send us an email at idahomatters@boisestate.edu, and we'll ask it next week. Dr. Pate, thanks as always, and we'll see you on Wednesday.
All right, Samantha, thank you. Everybody be safe and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I'm Samantha Wright, filling in today for Jim Agudat. You're listening to Idaho Matters.
Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts.
This new year, LifeKit wants to help you succeed, because everyone needs a little help being human.
It can seem so overwhelming. You're not alone.
Who can I commit to being?
If you want to do something, then just do it. Just take that first step.
Great advice every week. Listen to LifeKit from NPR.